This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
What poll observers are saying, we probably can't avoid a runoff, which is scheduled for February 21st next year.
That's reporter Mahmoud Lalo speaking about Niger's election. Details coming up. Also, Zimbabwe will delay reopening schools. And opposition politicians in the Central African Republic are calling for an annulment of last Sunday's presidential election. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Authorities in Zimbabwe will postpone the opening of schools. COVID-19 cases have been on the rise in Zimbabwe, as they have been in neighboring South Africa, where the pandemic is raging. Reporter Kuzadze Nwashi has more from Harare.
Guardians and parents woke up Wednesday to an announcement that Zimbabwe schools will not reopen next week as scheduled. Taunga Nandoro is the communications director in the Ministry of Primary and Secondary Education.
The deviation of the 2021 school calendar, it's true. The one we issued today, the exam class for last year are the ones who are going to write from 5 January to 5 February. All the other levels we will announce in due course.
Political analyst Vivid Gwede says government has made the right decision given how they handled COVID-19 in schools.
The decision to defer the opening of schools in light of the COVID-19 pandemic and the resurgent cases of COVID-19 is a good decision, given also that we have seen that the government has lacked enough capacity to make schools COVID-19 friendly. The health system is still struggling. This decision averts a lot of challenges that would have arisen from the opening of the schools.
Most Zimbabwe students have been out of school since March. A limited number of an exam-level students have been in class to prepare to sit their exams. Innocent Mushandu, who has four school-age children, says the government's move has bought them time.
We really commend government for what they've done. And also, it also gives us as parents some breathing space and time to maybe mobilize resources for us to get the school fees, to raise the school fees, given that we've just exhausted all our savings during the Christmas period. So I think it's a blessing in disguise for us.
Gwede says what is now needed is a clear roadmap on when schools will reopen.
What we look forward is a roadmap from the government as to when will the schools open. A lot of people have lost time during this COVID-19 pandemic. As we wait for probably the coming of the vaccine, we expect the government to come up with measures that will allow a bit of, normalcy in terms of the function of the schools.
The government also linked the delay in opening schools to the approach of Tropical Storm Shalen, which will hit Zimbabwe with heavy rains over the New Year holiday. That could lead to flooding and other problems that hamper travel and school opening. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
South Africa is struggling to get speedy access to a COVID-19 vaccine to ease the pressure on its health system. Some hospitals are at more than 100% capacity as a second wave of the pandemic causes infections and deaths to spike. More than a million people have been infected and more than 28,000 have died of coronavirus in the country. More than 500 of those deaths were yesterday. Darren Taylor has more.
As the COVID-19 toll mounts in South Africa, citizens want to know why the vaccines being rolled out elsewhere in the world aren't available yet in Africa's most developed economy. Opposition parties also point out that it's not only rich countries like the US and UK now giving vaccines to their people. It's also nations such as Chile and Mexico. Anban Pillay is Deputy Director General of South Africa's Health Department.
Many of these countries didn't participate in the COVAX facility, but rather got into bilateral agreements with a particular vaccine manufacturer. In this case, the Pfizer vaccine is the one that they put their money on as such, and it came through for them, and that's why they've been able to roll out their vaccines first.
Like 173 other countries, South Africa's part of the World Health Organization's COVAX facility. It's going to procure vaccines on behalf of these nations. South Africa, says Pillay, was not wealthy enough to gamble and pay up front for the Pfizer vaccine.
COVAX, on the other hand, took the approach of spreading its risk amongst a number of vaccine producers, because at the time when these trials started, there was no sense of which vaccine was going to succeed and which was going to fail.
He says COVAX has indicated it'll only be able to supply South Africa with inoculations in about 3 months, but will confirm a date within the next few days. In the meantime, says Pillay, the state's trying to secure vaccines from all the companies currently making them.
They've tied up many of their production to these larger economies where they obviously are garnering a much higher price. And so South Africa is being considered, but at this stage we can't confirm exactly when we can get earlier doses before April. But we're certainly trying our best to persuade each company to give us a small amount, especially for our healthcare workers who are in the front line of this.
Pillay says his department remains hopeful for some of Pfizer's vaccine, even though it's not the best one for South Africa, because it has to be stored at minus 70 degrees Celsius. The country has only two facilities able to keep medicines at such an extreme temperature.
However, in the context of accessing vaccine for our healthcare workers, we went back to Pfizer to say, would you be able to assist us with small volumes of vaccine for our healthcare workers? They've indicated, yes, we'll consider that, but we can only come back to you hopefully in March, but we can give you no firm commitment on that.
Yesterday, the UK approved the vaccine developed by Oxford University and made by the AstraZeneca company. South Africa contributed to the success by allowing the developers to test the jab on thousands of its people earlier this year. Opposition parties and citizens therefore want to know why the country isn't being given preferential access to the AstraZeneca vaccine. Pillay responds, that's not how things work in the real world.
You cannot say it to a company, because you did a trial in South Africa, you now have to give us a vaccine. There is no law like that. No country has such a law. Many drugs have been trialed in South Africa and they are not registered in the country simply because companies may choose not to do so.
So far, he says, only Johnson & Johnson has applied to register a vaccine in South Africa, but its trial results aren't out yet. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The leadership of the Nigerian community in South Africa says it is working to prevent its members from contracting the new COVID-19 variant in that country. The Nigerian Union in South Africa says it has created awareness among the more than 700,000 Nigerians living in that country on the variant. Adetelo Olubajo is the president of the union, the umbrella body of Nigerians living in that country. Olubajo spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye about the discovery of the new COVID-19 variant in South Africa. He says Nigerians have been advised to take preventative measures and apply all protocols and instructions against the virus by the South African government.
The reactions of Nigerian community to this second wave of COVID-19 is better than when it started in March, because there are a lot of information that are available and quite a number of people who are actually in denial that COVID-19 is not real have actually experienced it firsthand. So there is a lot of information and a lot of support groups are being created as a result of as a response to the emergency.
How are Nigerians in South Africa coping with the new restrictions by the government?
We believe they are coping well, because like I said earlier, that experience have actually taught us on how to keep safe, and various networks have been developed over time We have quite a number of support groups, groupings here and there. Information is very easy to pass across, and the doctors, the Nigerian doctors here, they are handy at every point in time to give free medical advice and services where necessary. So the community is more organized to actually combat this virus that is spreading. But that does not mean that we all need to be nonchalant about it. But from my own assessment, people are more aware. And
do you have plans to provide palliatives to Nigerians under new restrictions?
No, we don't have any plan to give palliative to Nigerians under these restrictions, because it's not a total lockdown. It's just a partial one, and just some measures that needed to be adhered to, like wearing masks and not gathering in large numbers and so on. So this is not a total lockdown that came as a shock to all of us. This is a partial one. It's no lockdown. It's just some restrictions here and there. It just needs some level of discipline. So we are not out to raise funds and then give palliative to Nigerians this second wave of the coronavirus.
What message do you have for Nigerians in South Africa on the new COVID-19 variant and restrictions?
Our message as Nigerian Union South Africa, NUSA, is very simple to all Nigerians, which we have passed across to our structures. And in the next 3 days or so, we'll be having a virtual meeting that we will use to unveil some of the things that we're going to do for next year, is that people should stick strictly to the directive of the government of South Africa, and they should avoid gathering and traveling as much as possible. We can always have a different Christmas these days by celebrating it with people in our immediate family. And so our message is very clear that they need everyone, every Nigerian, and even non-Nigerians should help the government to curtail the spread of this virus, because if we keep to the directive of the government, this virus will not spread the way it is spreading now. I would like to wish all Nigerians in South Africa a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year in advance. I pray that we will all meet again in 2021 and enjoy responsibly. And this time around, there is a new normal which we need to adhere to, that is to stay indoor. Let's stay with our family. We need to know ourselves better and then only go out where it's necessary. We can avoid holiday traveling, camping, and so on, and make sure we adhere to the strict directive of the government.
That was Adetola Olubajo, president of the Nigerian Union in South Africa. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Pretoria, South Africa. Vote counting is still underway in Niger following this weekend's presidential election. But as VOA's House of Service Mahamudu Lalo reports from Niamey, analysts say the race is likely to go to a runoff. Lalo spoke to VOA's Jason Patinkin in Washington about what might be next.
Vote counting is still underway, with the ruling party candidate Mohamed Bazoum of PNDS Tareya having what many describe as a comfortable lead in the race, with over 900,000 votes so far. The CENI has collated results from over 100 voting districts out of the 266 that they have around the country. So the opposition candidate, Mohamed Usman of RDR Party, is the second candidate with the highest votes, followed by Sen Omar of MNSD Nasara. So what will be a thorn in the flesh for Bazoum is that, from what poll observers are saying, he probably can't avoid a runoff, which is scheduled for February 21st next year.
You know, the vote counting has been going on now for about 4 days since the election over the weekend. Have there been any reports of irregularities or anything like that?
So far, there's nothing in respect of that. CENI has, that is the electoral body in Niger, has confirmed the fact that they have not received any complaint of irregularities. International observers such as ECOWAS, CENSAT, that takes care of countries from the Sahel region, African Union, and even Internal observers have all certified the fact that their results was peaceful, there was no irregularity so far.
And if it goes to a runoff, as you say, is expected, what will that look like?
A second round of election comes into play when no candidate secures 50% plus one of the total votes cast when in this first round. What we are likely going to be seeing in the coming weeks is the formation of alliances among parties. The major contending parties are now racing to seek for support from other parties as part of our preparation for the second round. But this is usually a conditional alliance where smaller parties will seek to take part in the formation of government. CENI has just 5 days to finish collecting these votes, and tomorrow is the final day. So from all indication, what political observers are saying is that a second round of the election is inevitable. So what the politicians are now doing is racing to see who they are going to seek for their support to secure their victory in the next round of the election.
Let's just take a quick look at the two candidates to update our listeners. If either of them were to win in an eventual runoff or even outright, if it turns out that way in the first round, what might the country look like under each of them?
Well, let me first start by saying that Bazoum Mohamed is campaigning on issues of security, education, especially girl child education, as well as even coronavirus that is seeing an uprising in the recent wave of the pandemic. On the other hand, Mahama Usman is campaigning on change. That is his slogan. He used the word change generally, not really specifying what he means by that. But then he's saying that he's going to bring about changes for the people in Niger. Generally, whoever wins this contest is going to be faced with lots of challenges, especially to do with security issues. You know, Niger has borders with Nigeria, which is experiencing Boko Haram insurgency. It also has border with Mali, with Burkina Faso, Algeria, and even Libya. All these are countries that border Niger, which are facing a lot of insurgency, which any leader that wins this election is going to be faced with those challenges.
That was VOA's House of Service reporter, Mohamed Oulalo in Niamey, speaking with VOA's Jason Patinkin. Opposition politicians in the Central African Republic are calling for an annulment of last Sunday's presidential election. They say a third of the voters were unable to cast ballots because of insecurity. News reports say campaigning was marred by threats from armed groups after several candidates, including former President François Bozizé, were barred from running. Security forces helped by 12,000 UN peacekeepers and reinforcements from Russia and Rwanda managed to fend off attacks in the capital, but attacks occurred in more rural areas. Five presidential candidates and Bozizé say insecurity halted voting in 2,115 polling stations. The country's Electoral Commission on Tuesday said that around 800 of a total 5,408 polling stations did not open because of insecurity. Ghana's mainly opposition party will formally challenge the outcome of the country's presidential election won by incumbent president Nana Akufo-Addo. Reuters News says the decision to challenge the outcome is a rare occurrence in Ghana, with the country having a reputation as being one of West Africa's most able democracies. Akufo-Addo was declared the winner of the December 7th election with 51% of the vote. Opposition candidate and former president John Mahama received 47%. The campaigns leading up to the election were filled with heated rhetoric. Election-related violence killed at least 5 people. The opposition National Democratic Party has yet to produce evidence of fraud and hasn't provided details about the case it will file. One of the continent's leading pro-democracy research organizations, the Electoral Institute of Sustainable Democracy in Africa, says many Africans have mixed feelings about the looming change of administration in the United States. President-elect Joe Biden is set to take the oath of office in less than a month. Here is Darren Taylor again with more.
The Institute's governance expert, Grant Masterson, says the recent tumultuous U.S. polls deepened the unease in Africa about the continent's future relations with Washington. He says some African leaders, particularly the more autocratic, voiced a particular attitude about the American vote.
A self-knowing, kind of smirking type of response that said, you see, America has the same problems with its democracy that we've been told are so bad about African democracies. America is now struggling with things that America has been telling Africa it needs to sort out in its own houses.
But the analyst adds that the dominant response was more measured and one of real concern about how the Biden administration intends to be involved in Africa. Masterson says the continent hardly featured at all in terms of the Trump government's policies, and this strengthened the hand of anti-democratic African leaders.
With its eye off the ball in Africa, America, as well as Europe, which has been consumed with its own problems during the Trump administration, has really kind of stepped back from encouraging and pressuring leaders to adhere to these democratic principles. Generally, the view has been that the Trump administration of the past 4 years has not contributed to any kind of progress or advancement of democratic ideals on the continent.
The New York-based research group, the Council on Foreign Relations, agrees this is the dominant view, but notes it's not entirely true. In an analysis published a few months ago, the Council says the Trump government arguably advanced the cause of democracy in the Democratic Republic of Congo by supporting the easing out of strongman Joseph Kabila in early 2019. It also supported initiatives to end the civil war in Cameroon and backed Sudan's fledgling democracy after dictator Omar al-Bashir was overthrown, also in 2019. But Masterson says that compared with past U.S. administrations, Trump retreated from Africa and the COVID-19 pandemic isn't an excuse for that.
It's been coming for a while. All the coronavirus has done is consolidated some of those regressive trends.
But the Council says Trump put U.S. policy toward Africa in the capable hands of especially Assistant Secretary of State for Africa, Tibor Nagy, and Mark Green, Administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development. Both, it points out, visited the continent often and built positive relationships with African political leaders. Masterson says Trump, as unpopular as he seems on the surface, still has plenty of support in Africa, and many were disappointed when he lost the election.
Some people have said, you know, what we actually need more of in Africa is the type of leadership that Donald Trump has said, and that is the view that, no, what we need is we need strong leaders who are prepared to say what they want, and they don't care about being politically correct, who don't care for the niceties of politics. That's actually quite a popular opinion as well, as people usually frustrated.
He has a message for the incoming Biden administration.
Africa is not a country. There are many different types of democracies. There are many different types of approaches to elections. There's still lots of work to do, yes, but there are many countries that still embrace transparency, that want to improve their structures, that want to strengthen their institutions, their rule of law, strengthen their judiciary, strengthen their media, etc. So we're going to be looking.
Masterson says it's in Washington's interest to back a continent that, despite its many problems, has immense economic potential. So far, he maintains, the U.S. has seemingly paid little attention to this, allowing China and Russia to occupy Africa's higher ground, as he puts it. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Ugandan opposition presidential candidate Robert Chagulani, popularly known as Bobby Wine, has tweeted that authorities returned him to his Kampala home in a military helicopter yesterday, several hours after he and his campaign team were arrested by police on the Kalangala Island in Lake Victoria. Reuters photographs from the scene of the arrest showed Wine being escorted by at least 10 police officers, some armed with rifles. In November, at least 54 people died after protests erupted following Wine's brief detention over alleged violation of social distancing measures. Wine has emerged as the strongest challenger to President Yoweri Museveni, 76. in the upcoming election, January 14th. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyu Suhibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.